It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 551. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. This show is brought to you in part by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers, unattended and on demand through firewalls. Try it free by clicking on the link on my website at miketechshow.com. Use the promo code MikeTechShow. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. Got a stack of email we're going to get to later in the show. You can leave me a voicemail. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. Have a great voicemail question that I'm going to spend some time in answering, and it's about what I recommend for laying out the network for a bar/restaurant. So I have some great ideas and going to keep it very simple, and I have a good solution. You can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow, Facebook, facebook.com/MikeTechShow, and also facebook.com/MikeNationNet. I have a jam-packed show. I have a story from the trenches, which happened yesterday at an orthodontist office. I have a couple tips and tricks, the voicemail I mentioned, the stack of email. Let's get started right away. I have a small law firm with 6 users, and they have Google Apps for their email. And they all use Outlook. As a matter of fact, they use Outlook 2007. And they want distribution lists. And they want to share them. But there's no Exchange server. It's just Google Apps. And they're using Outlook. So I have 2 links that I'm going to have in the show notes. I dug up and emailed them. And now they're using this. Creating and editing a distribution list. That's the first link, and it's very easy to follow the instructions on how to do that. But more importantly, when you don't have an Exchange server, how do you share a distribution list with others? And I have that link. Very helpful if you have any clients or maybe you're in need of sharing distribution lists and creating distribution lists. That's important. For those of you not aware of what a distribution list is, if you want to send an email to a lot of addresses, it's so much easier to have them all in one distribution list that you can send to that list, and then everybody will receive the email. Very simple, very easy to maintain. I don't use distribution lists because I'm usually not sending to multiple people. Now, you would think that I would, but I don't ever send a blast to all my clients. You know, you've never received an unsolicited email from me as a Mike Tech Show listener. I don't do that. I don't do any marketing like that, or, you know, want to send you things. I believe you get enough spam, you get enough junk. You listen to the show, you'll click on a link that you want to and you choose. I'm not going to be in your face with that. So it's just something that a method that I've chose not to take advantage of. And that's why you're never going to get blasts of emails from me. I don't even do a newsletter. I probably should. That's something I never take advantage of. And I never will. If you email me, you will never be put on any list whatsoever. But a lot of people need to do that for notifying multiple people, or maybe there's a lot of people in one company you need to email. But so distribution lists, very helpful. They can save you time and assembling your email. I get this a lot, and I mentioned this a while ago. There's sort of a, and it's not a bug so much as an inconvenience. If you open an Adobe, if you open a PDF, and you're editing and you're saving it, and you have file preview turned on, you can't save it on a server as the same name because it's already open. You have to turn off preview. Well, similar problem that someone was having with Word documents, they were having trouble saving. And when they were saving it, they were getting the message that someone else was opening it. Funny story this week, I get a call on Tuesday, an administrative assistant at a law firm. And after hours of trying to figure this out, she says, "Mike, it's driving me crazy." And when she described the problem, I said, "Turn off the file preview and file manager." She turned that off and the problem immediately went away. And she said, "I can't believe you just knew that off the top of your head, where I've been going crazy for hours trying to figure this out." And I love that I've been able to help someone. I said, don't beat yourself up over something like that. Text me or email me and I'll get back to you. And I might be able to shoot you a quick solution. Text me that quick question or that problem that they're having. You know, don't suffer. You don't need to. I may know the answer. I may have a very quick solution that I can share with you. And this is a perfect segue into my story from the trenches, which was an orthodontist office that is 99% iMacs all over. They're a Mac shop, Mac server running the orthodontist software that they use. Now, I don't do a lot of work. They're not on retainer, but when they have issues, they call me. And then I'll schedule them to come out and fix whatever's going on. Well, I get a call a couple days ago. They're having a printer problem, but it's from the PC. They have a nice HP LaserJet, real high-end one that's very fast, high capacity. It's the 600 M601, I think. And they love it. They're printing from the Mac. Everything's great. But they also need to print X-rays from a PC. Now, the reason why they have a lone PC, the X-ray machine can only send to the PC those X-rays. So if they need to print them out or send that X-ray somewhere, they have to manipulate that and get it through software that's communicating with the X-ray machine that's a PC. I think the interface to be able to go to a Mac is like some ridiculous price, like $15,000. So they can have a very inexpensive PC. So they're sending to this PC and they need to be able to print. The PC stopped printing to the printer. Everything starts to be messed up. And each of the admins and one of the nurses there, they all started trying to solve the problem. What a mess. Unbelievable. Now some of the Macs can't print to the printer. One can print. The others can't. There's a problem with one of the scanners no longer scanning to the iMac, one of the iMacs. And then there's a local printer that they have to print three times. The first two times and then cancel. And then the third one finally prints. And that's what they've been doing. I thought I was just walking into just this HP printer problem. I was walking into a much larger mess. It's been a few months since I've been there. And I can see all the little things that were attempted and failed, and it's ugly. They have a public and private Wi-Fi. Now, what the users don't realize is they're already connected via Ethernet. And I keep doing this. I keep telling them, turn off the Wi-Fi on the iMac. If you're connected via a hard wire, via Ethernet, you don't want to be on the wireless networks. And a perfect example, if they accidentally connect to the public network that's free for if you're a client, well, you can't access the printers. You can't access anything on the regular network because that's completely isolated and separate. So we sort of have to have a little IT training session there with everybody in the office. And it was great. I got there yesterday during lunch. so there were no patients, and I had everybody's full attention in the office as I start solving the problems. The first thing I do is I turn off Wi-Fi, off everything. I try to get an IP address on this printer. No joy there. I've tried everything, and I reset the network interface. I did everything. I'm not getting any lights on the cable. Replace the cable. The jack is good because I plugged in my laptop to the jack, and I got onto the network. So I know the jack is good. I know the cable's good. There's a problem with the network interface of the printer. Now I start getting the full story. There were multiple power outages over the 4th of July holiday weekend. So now I'm like, wow, I think one of these power outages might have blew the network interface on this printer. But there is a USB cable that was also connected. Somebody connected the USB cable to the one Mac. That's why she was the only one printing. So for the iMacs all in this office right here, and there were three others, I said, I can get you all to print to this printer right now. I shared out the printer on the USB interface on the iMac, went to all the computers, added the printer from the shared iMac. They start all printing. Now, the person that was having a problem with the scanner, and they have this local HP Envoy desk jet. Oh, I wish they didn't have these desk jets. I said, you know, what a waste of money with the cartridges, where you should really, you know, invest in the laser. Anyway, separate discussion. I get to the one iMac, and I start unraveling the cables, and I get down to the floor. There's a USB hub that they'd never need it. There's three USB ports on the back of this iMac. They only had two USB devices. They didn't need a hub. Why are they plugging in the scanner into a hub and then plugging the printer into that? There was no need for that. So I disconnect the hub, bring the cables up to the top, plug them directly into the iMac. They start scanning. They're now printing on the first try. I solved that. We disabled Wi-Fi. We shared the one main LaserJet printer, fixed the scanning, fixed the printing. So now I have the one problem in front of me, which is the one PC that can no longer print anywhere. Now, we have an OfficeJet Pro in this office that's also networked, and that's working. But when we went to print the X-ray, a test X-ray on that printer, it looked horrible on the inkjet. It was just unacceptable. I said, let's get an inexpensive HP LaserJet that we can put out here, and there's plenty of room under this little table where this PC sits. Let's put a dedicated HP LaserJet just for printing the X-rays. Nobody can print to it from the iMac. Keep it isolated. Keep it separate. Have it directly connected USB to this lone XP system. And yes, I said XP. I disabled the internet so they can still remain HIPAA compliant. They need the network connectivity, but they do not need internet access. That's one way of kind of skirting the HIPAA compliance and still being XP. So now they're getting that printer, hooking it up. Matter of fact, that was done today. They were able to just plug that in and it's working. So everything's great. I just wanted to share going in where at first it looked like it was just the printer issue. And now I understand everything they tried, why it wouldn't work, because the network interface blew on the printer. We don't even need that interface because the printing that's needed, they can do that by sharing it off of an iMac. And, you know, Windows sharing, we all know how to do that. Probably everybody listening. This is not a Mac show. If you're faced with OS X and sharing, it's very simple to share a printer and to share resources on a Mac. Very, very simple. I just wanted to let everybody know what I was working on and what happened yesterday. And now they are so, so happy. I've been seeing a serious uptick in spam. I have a law firm that is being crushed with spam, two users. And here's how we had to solve it. On SureWeb, we use exchange hosted services. You've heard me talk about ShareWeb. I love them for a solution for hosted exchange. All my clients that have a hosted exchange solution, they're on ShareWeb. Something I discovered when I was working with ShareWeb this week, if you're in this situation, even if it's not ShareWeb, but maybe another hosted exchange service, talk to the tech support if you're being crushed with spam, because they have their own spam filtering that you may have a way to turn it up. On ShareWeb, they have two engines that you can turn on. The first one's on by default, and it's set, I believe, at a level 4, where you have levels 1 through 6, a 6 being the highest, hardest, toughest blocking spam setting. So for two clients, actually one law firm and one property management company, I had to turn on both engines and crank them up to the highest level for blocking spam. That stopped this large uptick that I've seen here, and it's really more the last couple weeks. But there's something else, and this is really the bottom line. If you crank up your spam filtering and your blocking, you need to make sure you regularly check the quarantine area of your service. And I recommend this even if you use Gmail or Google Apps. Occasionally go in and check that spam folder, because good email could possibly be interpreted as spam and be blocked. You want to make sure that you absolutely consistently check the quarantine area so you're not missing any important emails. I fall into this trap a lot. Somebody sends me an email. As a matter of fact, I've had a listener send me, it was real important that they sent me this email. I never seen it. It got caught in the spam filter, and I didn't get it to maybe a week or two later because I do not check it frequently enough. And that's why I want to put that out there. Make sure you are regularly checking, your clients regularly check wherever junk mail or spam is being quarantined, so you can look for those false positives that are being caught. Let's move on to this voicemail.
Yes, Mike, this is Fred. I really enjoy your show for years, so keep up the great work. How would you advise for multiple router setup for a bar restaurant that would have like 100+ guests and maybe 10 employee cashier credit card machines going during a day and night? So I'd appreciate hearing how the multiple router setup could work for bar restaurant when you have so many guests but very few employee cashier and credit card machines going. I do appreciate it. Thank you, Mike. I will listen to you. Bye.
Fred, great question. Here's how I would approach it. First, the credit card machines and the cash registers or the point of sale systems that are throughout the bar restaurant, they absolutely, for PCI compliance, they must be isolated on their own network that has no wireless on that network and completely locked down. I would even give them static IP addresses, and I would make sure that there's no DHCP available if anybody even did connect to that network accidentally somehow. All of the wiring for those systems need to be funneled into a router, first maybe a little inexpensive switch, and then into a router that's then plugged directly into a port for your ISP. Let's assume that your ISP has at least 4 ports on the back of their supplied router. If they don't supply a router, I would then put a small switch that goes right from that router. And then in that switch, I would have 3 separate routers. Here's how I'm going to describe it. And they could be inexpensive. you need one dedicated and completely locked down with the firewall turned all the way up to its highest capacity for your PCI compliance for those machines that are dealing with credit card transactions. Second, the private network, if there are PCs or any kind of Wi-Fi for the employees, and I don't think there's much going on here. There might only be one, you know, or only a couple PCs, maybe back in the office or somewhere. They have to be on a separate network with a separate router. Now, you could get one big router that can segment, or you can set up VLANs, but I'm keeping it simple. Buy three inexpensive routers to do this. The third one is your public Wi-Fi. That's for the users and you that the clientele that are eating and drinking. You said there's 100 seats. I would want to see four access points around the restaurant to handle the load. And you got a couple choices. You could either roll out like the four ASUS routers, and I don't know how many square feet you have, but it's not so much the square feet as it is handling all of the users being able to process all of those sessions. Now, the ASUS routers can handle thousands of sessions, so you may get away with just two of the ASUS router, and I'm going to have the one that I like, the RC, I think AU68, something like that, that I've linked in my show notes many, many times, and I'll link it again. I would do that and set it up, set them up as access points, and have Ethernet wire to two spots. If that's a problem, Ubiquiti has really nice capabilities, and they almost look just like a little smoke detector. They're round. The access point, and it's power over Ethernet. You can get a small, inexpensive power over Ethernet switch, have it hooked to the one router that's plugged into the ISP, and then have a cable go into each one of those access points. Here's the catch, though. With the Ubiquiti, you have to have a dedicated system, a server, or even it could be a Windows 7 workstation that runs the control software that manages those access points. Now you're starting to get into some significant cost just to provide the convenience of public internet access. I would try a couple ASUS routers that you convert to access points, put them in the restaurant, have them isolated. So we're talking three network connections with total separate solutions within the three. Fred, if you need additional help, contact me. You can email my consulting email address. I'm mike@mhsconsulting.net. And I would be glad to further spend time at my hourly rate and be able to help you design this and get this configured and quoted up. If you need this for a client, or I don't know if it's your restaurant and bar or a family member, but I would be glad to help with the design of this network. And it can be easily done. And the items that I'm talking, we're not talking a big expense here, but we're talking about making sure that they are completely separate and isolated. The machines that are processing credit cards must be isolated for PCI compliance. You have no choice. Let's get on to some email. Now, I don't know if it's being filtered out or you hear it or not. I'm hearing tremendous thunder and lightning is happening right now as I record this. So let's hope we don't lose power. This is confusing ISP issue. This is from Chris. I have what I think might be an ISP issue, but I am not sure. I have a client with a couple of houses divided into apartments. My client has a cable modem in two houses just for remote viewing of a CCTV system. I don't know if the people living in the apartments have their own cable modems. Here's the problem. Three different people tried setting up a DVR for remote viewing, myself being the third. Every time, the first house is configured with no problem. The next day, the second house is set up with no problem, but by the end of the day, the first house goes down. Just remote viewing. The DVR is recording. By the end of the next day, the second DVR goes down. This happens with different brand DVRs and with or without a router in the loop. I tried with DVRs that use a peer-to-peer server setup and get the same issue. I have tried peer-to-peer as well as DDNS because this is dynamic IP. Any ideas would be helpful at this point. Thank you. You might need to check with your ISP. I agree. First, I need to understand what router is being used with the ISP, and do you have a complete bridging from the ISP's router back to your own router? I'm going to use Comcast as an example, and a hair salon in Center City, Philadelphia, that has exactly what you're talking about, where the only way to solve this was have Comcast pass through everything to their own Netgear firewall router that they have. That Netgear firewall router, we forward to static internal IP addresses of the DVR, and we forward the proper ports so anybody coming in that knows the port and knows the IP address, they can then remotely view, which is what you're looking for. But we have a static IP address, and that may be a big help this way you don't have to worry about having a dynamic IP address that you got to manage and that you got to use special software to have the DNS work. Get a static IP address. They're not that expensive. And then now you have that fixed IP address and you could easily use any domain that the owner has, and you could have house1.abc.com go to house1. And then house2.abc.com. So you can create some A records with those static IP address using the name house1, house2, house3, and so forth, and have these set up. It sounds like you have two houses here, and who knows, what if they buy a third or a fourth that they're renting and that they're using this for, and they want to have the cameras and the DVR? I would absolutely want to see a static IP address at each house. I would want your own router to be able to have the port forwarding. And I think that's it. And I think that's going to solve your problem. Let me know, Chris. Win 10 GPT. I tried installing a Windows 10 preview ISO to test a UEFI motherboard on a new drive formatted as NTFS MBR. Win 10 would not see the drive. I used MiniTool Partition Manager to convert the drive to GPT. It still refused to install. Finally, I wiped all partitions and then reconfirmed the drive as GPT, and all went well with no further problems. Here's a few topics here. The cure for low-volume podcast and audiobook listening. By the way, before the show tonight, and you may notice a definite improvement in the volume of my podcast, I have a very, well, not real complicated setup, but the insert, which basically sends my microphone through the equalizer, the gate compressor, and the AFIX controller, was not inserted all the way in the mixer. And I just happened to notice that. It was not plugged in all the way. And I think I unplugged that when we were trying to fix a sound problem and I never plugged it back in. What a huge difference here. So I think I've solved my audio gain problem, but I'm also going to look at that at the end of the night. And when I'm done and I'm editing my show, I'm going to make sure that the gain is proper. I will amplify it if it's not loud enough. And that's going to answer actually a couple other emails here. He continues, the way I handle low volume audio with minimal distortion when working around the house and garage is with a very cheap FM transmitter and receiver set and earbuds. Many brands of modest quality noise suppression earbuds will block out most extraneous noise. And he has a link and battery powered 3-volt RF transmitter and shirt pocket receiver. Very cheap, but it works. Or alternately, I just plug my MP3 player or phone into my AVR auxiliary 3.5mm jack and pipe it through my home speakers. I put a carry handle on my front center speaker with a 30-foot wire. I can carry it into other parts of the house. You could do this with a remote wireless speaker connected to AVR as well by adjusting the AVR output or audiobooks or stream recorded talk shows to get what is essentially a mono voice output at the center front. Early radio stream capture. I started recording AM radio talk show in the early 90s, way before podcasts. I used large outdoor antenna with two AM receivers and VHS recorders scheduled to auto start and stop using 8-hour tapes. Wow. I could record up to 4 3-hour shows per day and use a remote control to fast forward through commercials. Sometime around early 2000, I discovered internet radio and started using Applin Replay Radio to automate schedule. I've heard of that. And record and convert radio streams to MP3. In those early days before broadband, I could record 2 shows simultaneously on a 56K V90 modem because proprietary audio stream packets were only between 15K and 30K each. Wow, very, very cool. And by the way, I used to do similar things by recording a show that would stream via the internet at certain times. And I forget what the program was, and I used this years ago I'm trying to think of some of the shows that were just such a long time ago that are just no longer around, and they were always tech shows, of course. He has all of the links for this Applin, Applin. Unfortunately, Applin has adopted the annual or monthly subscription cash flow model for new products. Isn't that the case? I mean, we've seen Microsoft, Adobe, everybody's heading to that model for a revenue stream where they're basically going to rent the software to you. They want a monthly stream of income because they just can't do it anymore with that one price and that's it, and then nobody upgrades. I've never successfully found a way to adjust Audacity to record stereo mix analog output on Linux Ubuntu. It is an easy setup in Windows, but Linux sound card capture baffles me. If any listener can simply list the settings for Audacity analog sound card recording in the show notes, I'd be glad to try it. I've had no solutions on Linux forums with this question. Thanks, Mike. Great show as usual. And this is Will from Indy. Thank you. This is from another Chris. Response to show 550 regarding audio quality. Mike, on show 550, you asked about the audio quality of your show. I think the quality is very good, better than many podcasts. However, I agree that the audio volume is a bit too low. And again, I think I fixed it. And he goes on, he loves the show. Chris, thank you for following up. And anybody that if you have any question or any issue in anything you're watching and listening, sometimes I forget something in the show notes, let me know. I'll be glad to fix that. And sometimes that's the only way I know. It's like having a second check and having you check that for me. So thank you. It's the only way I'm going to solve this and make it perfect. This is Kevin. Mike, I've been meaning to send this email to you for some time. My apologies for taking this long. I'm a longtime listener and always walk away from your podcast a bit smarter than I was before. For that, I thank you. The purpose of this email is to address the issue you're having with WSUS Offline. You covered this a few shows ago, and I have a solution for you. I, too, have had issues in the past where WSUS Offline just stopped updating. The error is due to a file integrity verification error. The solution is to delete all the files in the /client/MD directory. The location of this directory can vary depending on how you have WSUS Offline set up. Here is a link to the show notes covering this error directly from the WSUS Offline forums. Give it a shot and let me know how it turns out. Kevin, thank you. As a matter of fact, Kevin, I've got WSUS working. Someone sent me an email a few weeks ago saying, Mike, make sure you have a separate directory for where everything's going to go. And before you start, make sure it's completely empty. And I did not do that before. So once I did that, I got the full download and it seemed to work. Now, this is a good tip and a good link I'm going to have in case, as I continue with this, I have a problem with it updating. Thank you very much for that. This is from Tom. The perfect router to use for Wi-Fi segmentation is a Zyel ZYXEL USG40 or a USG40W. You can pin a port to specific LAN and it has built-in layer 2 isolation toggle for both LAN and wireless with built-in wireless controller. It has the same backend as all the other higher-end USGs. With non-UTM bundle, you can get the router for $217. With the bundle, UTM services, $287. Pro Advantage is also the best price to buy UTM subscriptions, too. Free firmware upgrades. Look at the link demo and to demo the back end. Demo username and password is screened into the background that you need to use to log in. Okay, great. And he has the links here. So thank you for that recommendation, and I will have them all in the show notes. This is from Robert on routers. On show number 550, you talked about getting a cheap router for your guest and a second router for private networks. So that way you have two routers plugged into one cable DSL modems at one time via a network's cable with two reference IP addresses, for example, guest network, SID, guest, and he has them out there. Question one, if you do that and the guest has a virus or malware on these computers, can I jump from the guest network to the private network and infections on the computers on the private network like CryptoLock and other ones like that? No, you cannot, because there's no direct connection. No matter what you do, you're not routing the one set of IP addresses to the other. And without that routing happening, you can't traverse the two networks. like that. Second question, on the guest router, if the guest plugs into the router via a wire, will that give the same security as the wireless in keeping them separate? Absolutely. And that's exactly why I want the separate router like that. Those Ethernet ports on the back, you can just plug in and you're on the guest network and you're going to get the IP address from that router, which is going to keep you separate. Third question. If you have a cable DSL modem with built-in wireless and a second router as guest plugged into the wired, will that keep them separated from the private network? Yes, again, because you're not routing the IP address from the one network to the other. You are separate. You are protected. If you're infected on the guest network, you will not infect the private network. Good questions. This is from Roger. For your Windows installs, have you forgotten about Nlyte? And you know I talk about Nlyte all the time. No, I haven't. It's just, you know what? I'm lazy. To sit and go through the Nlyte instructions and build out, I really need to take the time and build out using Nlyte to make a slipstreamed current version of the operating system with all the patches. And that's what Roger's referring to here with Nlyte Link, the Nlyte deployment tool for the bootable unattended Windows installation, and AutoPatcher and AutoPatcher.next index page. You know what, Roger? You're absolutely right. And I haven't mentioned Nlyte and AutoPatcher in a very long time. So thank you for putting that in front of me again, and I will have those links. This is also from Roger. Getting MP3s from YouTube. Mike, I heard your tip about recording from YouTube using the setting for stereo mix from your sound card. Here is a tip for getting MP3s from YouTube. I have been using DVD VideoSoft's YouTube to MP3 for years. It works great. Just copy and paste the YouTube link into the program and it downloads and converts your songs to MP3. That is awesome. Thank you, Roger. And he also has a link. I have been using FreeMake, free YouTube to MP3 converter, and it also works great. And he has that link. That is fantastic. I will have both of those links into the show notes. Lots of great show notes here. Final email from Jason. And Jason also mentions about the audio level, and I think I fixed it. So here's what I'm doing for the audio. I'm going to test how it sounds from the final recording here now that I have the insert into the mixer going through the compressor and everything, and I think that solved the volume problem. I'm now also going to look, when I'm getting ready to edit, I'm going to select all in Audacity and amplify and see if it comes up with zero or what number it comes up to, and I will definitely amplify it. Then I'll recompress and normalize and then start editing. And then that's saved as a wave, which I then convert to an MP3. And I'll listen to it again, only this time what I'm going to do is make sure that I have it on my iPhone and start playing it from my iPhone so I can hear it, because I don't test with my iPhone and I really should, because that's how most of you are listening, whether it's your Android device or iPhone. I really need to test with that. That's it for tonight's show, and I hope you enjoyed it. If you purchase anything from Amazon or know anybody that purchases from Amazon, please use my Amazon link, amazon.micnation.net. Your price stays the same, but a small commission comes back to support the show. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for staying subscribed, listening to the podcast. Please remember to check out our sponsor, Instant House Call. You can download a free trial for 15 days. Use the promo code MikeTechShow when you're downloading that free trial. We also have Fabs Auto Backup for Tech 6 Pro. Tremendous. And don't forget Tech Nibbles business kit for anybody with a repair shop, consulting business. His business kit version 3 has all the forms and all the documents that you need for your business. That's it. I'll see you next week. Same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.